Straight Talk about vision loss with Mark Riccobono.
Welcome to Straight Talk about vision loss. We have another great interview for you here from the Jernigan Institute in our Jacobus Tenbrook Library. Our last episode, as you know, was with James Gashel. We talked about the Kurzweil National Federation of the Blind Reader Mobile. And I have one here. I've been using it for about a week and a half, and it really is a tremendous device. I wanted to bring it here to Straight Talk again because I take it everywhere. It is wonderful. We have been very busy here at the Jernigan Institute. We've had our third annual Transition to Independence Career Fair. We had 93 blind students, teachers, parents here to learn about opportunities, career opportunities from blind mentors in a variety of fields. We have information about that at our website, nfb.org. We have coming up at the Jernigan Institute a very exciting new program. This is the Jacobus Tenbrook Disability Law Symposium. Jacobus Tenbrook was the founder of the National Federation of the Blind and first president. And we have a library here at the Jernigan Institute, actually, where we film Straight Talk. And we're having a disability law symposium to talk about the past, present, and future of disability law in this country. Civil rights and how they apply to people with disabilities is a notion that Dr. Tenbrook really got the ball rolling on. And so we thought it was appropriate with the law symposium coming up to have a blind lawyer to visit with us about activities around the country, legal matters, the National Federation of the Blind, and our law symposium. Also want to note that we have our annual celebration event coming up, and of course we hope that all of you will participate if you can in that or in our March for Independence event coming up in Dallas. Now let's go visit with our guest, Scott Labar, who is an attorney and who lives in Denver, Colorado. Scott, welcome to Straight Talk.
Thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. We've been colleagues in the Federation for a long time, so this is a great opportunity. Scott, you are the president of the National Federation of the Blind of Colorado. I had the opportunity to be at Colorado's last convention, a tremendous event. Can you tell us a little bit else about Scott Labar?
Well, I've been involved in the National Federation of the Blind since 1986. When I won an academic scholarship and then went through college and law school and became a practicing attorney in 1993. Since 1998, I have owned and operated my own law practice. I do mostly employment law, some disability rights, social security work, and related matters. I've been president of our lawyers division in the Federation, the National Association of Blind Lawyers, for gosh, I don't know, I guess 13 years now.
Excellent. Scott, let's begin, because I want to talk a little bit about some of the ways that you go about practicing law as a blind person, and also a little bit about some of the issues that you're working on nationally. But let's begin by talking about the Jacobus Tenbrook Disability Law Symposium that's coming up at the Jernigan Institute, April 11th. And let's begin by, can you tell us a little bit about Jacobus Tenbrook from a legal perspective?
Jacobus Tenbrook is truly a giant, not only in the field of blindness, but in the legal field. Every first-year law student studies constitutional law. And one of the big doctrines we study is equal protection under law in the 14th Amendment and related Fifth Amendment. And one of the greatest and most prolific authors on the topic of equal protection was our very own Dr. Tenbrook. So it was of a particular joy for me to read his name in my law school books. And of course, it didn't mention that he was a blind scholar or anything like that. He was just one of the great equal protection scholars and one of the great names in the field. Right. So that's what I can tell you about Dr. Tenbrook.
Excellent. And so we have decided here at the Jernigan Institute to host a disability law symposium to carry on the work that Dr. Tenbrook first began many years ago. And Scott, you're on our steering committee. Can you tell our audience a little bit about the Law Symposium and how it's going to drive the future of disability law.
In the legal field, there are thousands and thousands of continuing legal education seminars. Mm-hmm. That's what we call them every year. But very, very few are dedicated to the issue of disability rights. Mm-hmm. As you know, in 1990, the United States Congress and President George Herbert Walker Bush signed the Americans with Disabilities Act. Mm-hmm. And this was the first broad-based disability rights statute passed in our country, which applied not only to the public sector but to the private sector. And many thought that the passage of that law would dramatically change the standing of people with disabilities in our country. Mm-hmm. And that really hasn't been the case. The courts have defined and construed the ADA very, very narrowly. In fact, I saw a figure recently that something like 97% of employers who are sued under the ADA win and defend their lawsuits. In other words, less than 3% of employees with disabilities win their lawsuits. Wow. And we believe there's a fundamental misunderstanding by the courts and the legal community about the protections in the ADA. Mm-hmm. And since we don't have many seminars on disability rights, explaining the law, interpreting it, talking about its future, we thought it was crucial to offer such a seminar. And this seminar is going to do exactly that. We're going to talk about the current status of the law, which, quite frankly, isn't very good from many of our perspectives, and what we need to do to change it. We're going to talk about the case law, what's been going on, what legislatively we can do to change it, what they do in other countries that might be better practices. It's going to be a wonderful seminar right here at our Jernigan Institute.
Excellent. I should mention that the Texas Journal of Civil Liberties and Civil Rights will be publishing all of the papers presented at our symposium, so everybody will be able to get access to those and read about the happenings at the Law Symposium. Scott, can you talk a little bit about your practice and about being a lawyer who happens to be blind? A lot of people might wonder how it is that a blind person can manage the details of law work and being in a courtroom. Can you give us some straight talk about that?
Absolutely. One of my most interesting memories is of a time way back in 1996 where I went to an American Bar Association conference that was being held actually in Vancouver, British Columbia. Mm-hmm. It was a meeting of the Young Lawyers Division. I'm not a young lawyer anymore, but I was officially qualified as a young lawyer at the time. And I walked into the room where the meeting was being held, and somebody came running up to me and grabbed my arm and started pulling me out of the out the door saying, "Sir, sir, sir, you're in the wrong place." And I said to the guy, "Look, is this the meeting of the young lawyers?" And he said, "Well, yeah. Well, I am a young lawyer, and I believe I have found the right place." Well, this person was just astonished. He was astonished that a blind person could be a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And that is what happens to me all the time. Mm-hmm. People just cannot believe that a blind person can manage the job of being an attorney. Mm-hmm. And of course, we know that that is not true. We as blind people indeed can be any kind of attorney in any kind of practice, practicing any kind of law. Mm-hmm. I am totally blind. Mm-hmm. So I use all the alternative techniques available to me. I use Braille. Mm-hmm. Without Braille, I don't think I'd be a good attorney. I use assistive technology on my computer to read email, to write documents, to do my legal research. I use readers in my practice because not everything comes electronically, so you have to have a way to deal with it in a non-electronic way. Mm-hmm. And I rely heavily upon, for example, good travel skills. Mm-hmm. I've got to be able to present myself well in front of a court, in front of a jury. That means I have to be able to navigate the courtroom well. Mm-hmm. I have to demonstrate competence and confidence. And that's why the philosophy of the National Federation of the Blind has not only been wonderful in terms of my blindness, but in terms of my practice. I have a strong, deep belief in myself that not only am I a competent blind person, I'm a competent attorney as well.
That's excellent. And the National Association of Blind Lawyers is a division of the National Federation of the Blind, and you all have a lot of activities at our national convention and throughout the year. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, we do have a lot of activities. One activity we have all the time, year-round, 24/7, is our listserv. We were the first listserv in the nation, maybe even the world, for blind attorneys, and that listserv still grows and helps us as blind attorneys network and ask each other questions. So that's one of our activities. We meet at least twice a year at our national convention where we have CLE training, continuing legal education training, where our blind attorneys can apply for credit from their various state bars and receive that kind of credit that we all need to maintain our licenses. And this year we're doing something fun and very special, actually, in conjunction with the Tenbrook Seminar Symposium. We're going to be having our own CLE seminar the day before on the 10th of April, where we're going to work with Thompson West, the manufacturer, the sustainer of Westlaw, and we're going to work, for those who don't know, that's the world's largest online legal research database. And we're going to have representatives of West here to work with us on how you use assistive technology, JAWS for Windows, WindowEyes, whatever, Zoom Text, all that stuff, how you use that with Westlaw, what are the most effective strategies to employ. In other words, it's going to be a training to help blind attorneys be more competitive.
Excellent. It sounds like one of the key benefits of the division as well, of course, from the National Federation of the Blind is the mentoring from other blind lawyers.
So that's
outstanding. We should mention that you can get to the listserv by visiting nfbnet.org.
You got it.
And looking that up.
Just look for blind law.
Excellent. Now, Scott, there are many issues, of course, going on across the nation, legal related matters and intersecting with blindness. Maybe you can talk about some of the blindness related activities in the legal arena that you're working on.
Gosh, there are so many, but some of the most interesting are educational issues. We're working very hard right now to make sure that blind children have the kind of education that the law promises. The law promises a free and appropriate public education for each and every blind child. We're not getting it. And we're not going to stand still for that. And we're going to use the law to make sure blind kids throughout this country get better education. That means getting their textbooks on time. This is a problem that we've dealt with for decades. At one point, it was really truly a logistical issue to be able to produce a textbook for a blind child at the same time as the sighted child. You had to go off and braille it. You had to go off and record it. You had to go off and do a lot of labor-intensive, time-intensive things. That's not true anymore with technology. You can get an electronic file and put it into speech or put it into braille within a day. And the law, in fact, because of the work of the National Federation of the Blind, the law guarantees that every blind child will have his or her textbook at the same time as his or her sighted peers. Well, even though that's been the law now for several months, and there was a long lead-up period for a couple years to implement this, and all the states were supposed to be ready, it hasn't happened. It just hasn't happened. Most blind children are not getting their textbooks on time. We're going to look into why that's happening, and we're not going to rest until it does in fact happen.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would be surprised to know how little the law, although it guarantees some things, how little implementation actually happens for kids at the grassroots level. So that's tremendous.
A law is only as good as the paper it's written on. And you got to get out there and enforce it. You got to be proactive, and parents have to advocate for their children, and we're going to help them do that.
Excellent. I know probably you have worked on cases of discrimination and things that people probably think don't happen in the 21st century. to blind people. Have you worked on anything recently related to that?
Well, yeah, I work on a lot of different cases, and there are a lot of things that happen along those lines. One of the most remarkable was a case I worked on just in the last few years where a cruise line didn't want a blind honeymoon couple to go on their ship alone. The cruise line was worried that this blind couple would be of a safety risk mm-hmm. on the ship. And therefore, in order to sail on this cruise line, they wanted the blind honeymoon couple, mind you, to have a sighted attendant yeah. present with them yeah. 24 hours a day
yeah.
in the honeymoon suite and everywhere. Yeah, so yeah. I don't know what your idea is about a honeymoon, but that ain't mine.
Yeah.
So that's an example. And you wouldn't think that would happen anymore.
Right. Right.
But it does.
Yeah.
And we see, I've handled so many cases where an employer has not wanted to hire a blind person or keep on a blind person after they went blind because the blind person was going to be some sort of safety risk.
Right.
Either in a manufacturing job and sometimes even in non-manufacturing jobs.
Right.
They just assume right. that blindness means helplessness and blindness, therefore, is going to be a safety risk.
Right. And then, of course, as blind people, we know this well. We deal with this every day, but I think a lot of people would be interested in knowing the struggles that we still face. And I really appreciate that you're one of the lead advocates out there helping to defend those rights. That's really wonderful.
Well, I appreciate doing the work. It does mean a lot to me that I can apply some of my training and education to helping other blind people.
Scott, as we close, I note, thinking about rights of blind people and various things, that in addition to being a leader, an advocate, an attorney, you're also a family man.
Yes.
And you have a couple of children. And that, of course, is an issue that for many of us, me being a father and my wife also being blind and you as well, we think about that because there still are cases today where people try to take children away because their parents yeah. are blind. So
we do see that fairly often where in, for example, a divorce situation, the sighted parent will argue to the court, no, you cannot give the blind parent custody of the children because he or she is blind.
Mm-hmm.
And that's obviously a safety risk, and the kids are not going to be reared well, and mm-hmm. so on and so forth. And
yeah.
we have to, unfortunately, we still deal with that a few times every year.
Yeah.
You would think that we'd gotten along farther here, but it's amazing how much that still comes up. And you're right. I mean, I've got two kids, a five-year-old little boy, Alexander, and a three-year-old girl, Emily, and they're wonderful children. And my wife is indeed legally blind, and we have fortunately never faced any problems in terms of anybody with any kind mm-hmm. of authority
right.
trying to come in and mess with our lives, but we often do get questions
yeah.
about how do you do it as blind people.
Right. Well, that's great. Scott, is there anything that you might want to share? This came to mind because you mentioned the cruise, but is there anything that you might want to share while you have the opportunity about the NFB of Colorado as we wrap up here?
Well, thank you, Mark. Sure, there's a lot I can share, but I'd love for people to know that basically a year from now, the National Federation of the Blind of Colorado is going to be working with Carnival Cruise Lines to have a cruise. It's a fundraising cruise for the Federation. All you have to do is book a cabin, and you can come with us to the Mexican Riviera on the SS Pride, or whatever they call the ship. And it'll be a great deal of fun. The Carnival Cruise Line, this particular ship, has a lot of activities for kids, so it's a family trip as well. And you go to places like Puerto Vallarta and Mazatlan and a few other cities, and we'd love for people to sail with us.
Excellent. So blind people are doing the full range of activities and living life to its fullest.
Absolutely. Our blind folks on the trip will be doing all the parachuting kind of stuff and all the wild activities. And we'll have a lot of fun.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Scott. I appreciate it. And then people can get more information on the NFB of Colorado. I assume you have a website.
We do, www.nfbco.org.
Excellent. Well, Scott, thank you so much for being with us. And that'll wrap up this episode of Straight Talk.
Thank you.
www.nfb.org, 410-659-9314.